Evening, everyone. Lovely to be back with you this evening. I'm in slightly better voice than I was last time when I was with you. I was struggling a little bit, but normal service is almost resumed. And I want to take the opportunity this evening to introduce you to the life of Augustine. Now, if we were to think about the past 2,000 years of church history, we probably would say that since the time of the apostles, Augustine was the greatest Christian thinker of all, a massive thinker. His thoughts about Christianity, the way in which he spoke about Christian doctrine, has really shaped the way that evangelicals speak of their faith today. Even if you were to cast your mind back 500 years to the time of the Protestant Reformation, you could say in so many ways, the Reformation was simply a rediscovery of the really important things that Augustine taught about God's grace. And the grace that he was teaching about, we're going to see this evening, was no second-hand thing for him. We've been singing about it in some of the songs already this evening. Grace, a well too deep to fathom. Well, Augustine knew all about that. We were singing about who else could rescue me from my failures. Well, it was a holy God that came to Augustine in all his failures, and God's grace completely transformed his life. So I want to introduce you to his story, and we do that by going back to the 4th century and to the year 354 and to Thagaste in Roman North Africa, which is present-day Algeria. Now, Thagaste was a nondescript little town. We're talking about the stage where the Roman Empire, which had been so great and expansive, is now coming into a period of nearly constant civil war and is soon going to fall apart. And Augustine comes from a mixed Roman and Berber background. He's from what we might refer to as the middling sort. So his father farms, and when his father has a bad harvest, well, at a time like that, he won't be able to pay the school fees for Augustine, and so Augustine will have to come home from school for that time. His father is a man called Patricius, and Patricius was a pagan, but Augustine's mother, Monica, she was a devout Christian. By this stage in the 4th century, Christianity is now legalized. That means that she's free to practice her faith. And it's not an easy relationship. So Monica and Patricius, it's a difficult relationship. Patricius, he's an older man. He's a man that we know who had a very bad temper. And Monica is a skilled woman. She's able to steer and corral Patricius into behaving in a way in which she and her children can more or less cope with. Now, in the ancient world, a child born into a situation like that would follow the religion of his father. But even with that, Monica doesn't let anything stop her from bringing her son Augustine to church. And Monica has great ambitions for Augustine. She is always standing there pushing Augustine forward, thinking that he's going to make it. And as he makes it, he's going to bring the whole family up in the world. And Monica thinks the best way to do that is by giving Augustine a good education. But Augustine himself, even though he's been brought up going to church, he soon, during his teenage years, starts to stray from his mother's faith. From Augustine's point of view, he blames this on his parents' decision to give him a pagan education. They had done that because they thought that's what would be essential if he was going to succeed socially. When he was aged 11, he was sent off to board at a school 20 miles away, and he was there for 4 years, but had to return home when he was 16 because the family fell into financial difficulties. So much of what we know about Augustine and his life comes from one of these great works of literature, one of these books which has nearly always been in print ever since the day, Augustine's Confessions. It's something like a sort of spiritual or intellectual autobiography, and it tells us so much about Augustine's own development and thought. Quite famously, Augustine tells us that his life, even from his days as a teenager, was all about seeking satisfaction through sex. Now, Monica had warned him about this, but Augustine ignored her, and the Confessions tells us that he boasted about his exploits, both real and imagined. Even as a young man, he was well aware that what he was trying to find fulfillment in was also at the same time almost like a form of slavery. Listen to the way that he describes it in his Confessions. My sins consisted in this, that I sought pleasure, sublimity, and truth not in God, but in his creatures, in myself and other created beings, so that I was plunged into miseries, confusions, and errors. For Augustine, this was a time of real barrenness. He said, looking back, I became to myself a region of destitution. So he's a troubled young man, looking for success, looking for meaning, and looking for fulfillment, and finding nothing. Now, in Thagaste, there wasn't much to keep Augustine there. So about a year later, he was sent off to Carthage for further education, which was paid for by a wealthy benefactor, Romanianus. He went to Carthage, and there in Carthage, he would pursue advanced studies in rhetoric. His father, around this time, became a believer shortly before his death in 372. So you're looking at Carthage here. Roman Carthage is now in the suburbs of Tunis. It was the capital of Roman Africa, and it was the second city in the western part of the Roman Empire. And in Carthage, Augustine settled down into student life. He spent a lot of time at the theatre, and before long, he acquired a mistress who bore him a son before he was 18 years old. This was a difficult sort of relationship. Socially, she wasn't his equal, and that meant there was absolutely no expectation that Augustine would go on to marry her. He got into the relationship simply for lust, but soon things changed, and as he put it, his heart was hers. They had a much-loved child, Iodatus. The name meant given by God. So he's there in Carthage for education. He's involved in a study of what we would refer to as the classics. Spends a lot of time reading Latin and Greek authors. And he's been taught how to give great speeches. That's what rhetoric was all about. It was communication, it was media, it was selling things, it was moving people. That's Augustine's business. He's all about communication, and he's all about trying to reach people. He's doing really well at it, but spiritually, Augustine is restless. As he prayed in one of his most famous sayings at the time, you have made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it finds rest in you. That's how Augustine thought about it looking back. But at the time, he simply felt restless, unsettled, doing and trying anything that he could for fulfillment, and just finding out that he was still living in a wasteland. Now, in the meantime, he tried to find some answers for this. He tried to commit himself to studying philosophy. He wanted to try to find the truth, different from what his day job was all about. In many ways, it was about entertainment. It didn't really matter what you were talking about, whether it was true or false. All that mattered was, would it move people? Would people receive it well? Augustine, he doesn't want that. He wants to know, what's the truth? What's right or wrong? And for 9 long years at this time, he allied himself with a Persian religion called Manichaeism, much to his mother Monica's horror. And in this Persian religion, in the world, there were two ultimate powers. There were the powers of light and the powers of darkness. Manichaeism presented itself as a universal religion, one that transcended all others, taught that in this world, the powers of light and the powers of darkness are in a constant battle right across the world and right within every individual person. Mani said, in each person, there's a spark of light, and all the forces outside are trying to extinguish that light, and the religion was all about trying to let that spark really glow and flame so that it would enter into harmony with the light in the rest of the world. In Manichaeism, it's all about your efforts and what you can do to try to make this flame blow within. And for Augustine, this was in some ways attractive to him. And it was attractive because it gave him peace of mind and peace of conscience about all his sexual promiscuity. He could claim that the real Augustine wanted to be someone of the light, but his problem was all these things outside and beyond him, which were causing his problems and difficulties and trying to snuff that spark out. Augustine could say, I had the best of intentions, but I just couldn't help it. His good soul, he thought, might have remained pure, even though he was engaged in all these outward and fleshly moral failings. So he's with the Manichaeists, and to begin with, he's really enthusiastic about it. But gradually he becomes disillusioned. It couldn't satisfy Augustine. His words again. I had become to myself a place of unhappiness in which I could not bear to be, but I could not escape from myself. And soon, the answers which were offered by the Manichaeists left Augustine unsatisfied and disillusioned. And so he decided he needed to find another means to satisfy his restless longings, and he thought he would do that by trying to achieve real and significant worldly success. And at the time, he was on a path to do that because his career was really going places. Augustine was an incredibly talented public speaker. He had ambitions far beyond what there was in Carthage, and he couldn't help but feel the pull and the tug towards Rome. That's a CGI image of what Rome would have looked like at the time when Augustine thinks about crossing the Mediterranean and going right to the center of the world to see if he can make it there. So he left Africa in 383. He came to Rome. It wasn't at all what he expected. As soon as he arrived, he fell ill. And when he did finally start to teach, people mocked him for his provincial accent. He had better students in Rome than in Carthage, but the students in Rome, they were reluctant to actually pay him for his teaching. Now, he's still with the Manichees in Rome, but he's disillusioned with it, and instead he's drawn more and more to the thinking of the philosophers. Within a year, he decides that he's going to leave Rome, and he goes to Roman Milan, because he acquires a teaching post there, teaching rhetoric. The terms of the job were attractive, there was a good salary with it, and he was appointed in 384. Now, Milan was a significant city at the time. There was an emperor's palace there. All the government bodies met in Milan. And it was an important post, which would mean that he could be a public speaker in the Roman court. His job in Milan was all about giving speeches in honor of prominent officials, acting as something like a spokesman, trying to advance the state's agenda. So all of a sudden, this provincial 30-year-old from a North African backwater is mingling in the corridors of power with the aristocratic elite, and he has the ear of the emperor himself. Now, we've mentioned his mother, Monica. She's never too far behind Augustine, and she follows him to Milan. And she knows that the whole Roman Empire is built on a system of political patronage, one which is often advanced by strategically placed bribes. With the right dowry, Augustine is going to be able to become a provincial governor. And so in 385, Monica arranges for a suitable marriage for Augustine, one which is going to be conducive to a successful career. And so Augustine at that point sends his concubine away. We never even know her name. It's generally been believed that she was a slave. And now they separated. She leaves Augustine and her son. So he's now 30. His wife-to-be is from a wealthy family. But she wasn't yet at the age when she could marry. And so whilst he waited, Augustine took up another concubine in order to satisfy his desires. That's the Augustine that we find in Milan in the year 386. He's experienced huge success in his job. His prospects are incredibly promising, but on the inside, he is torn up by doubts, anxiety, and guilt. Augustine, despite having so much, was horribly unhappy. One day, as he was gearing up to give a high-pressure speech, he found himself looking at a drunk wandering down the other side of the street and envying the life of the drunk, thinking, I'd far rather be in that situation than be where I am at the moment. He was working his way up the ladder, but he's drawn to skepticism. He's living in a time when he doesn't know what he really believes about everything. He talks about the Roman court, the place where he is, and he says there everything was fake. He wants answers. He wants the truth. And Manichaeism had proved itself to be hollow. The prospects of career meant little to him, and sex had become the source of constant relational pain. He was torn in his allegiance. He puts it this way. He's speaking to God. I was caught up to you by your beauty and quickly torn away from you by my weight. With a groan, I crashed into inferior things, and this weight was my sexual habit. Augustine is there, deeply aware of his own sinfulness, and yet at the very same time, unwilling to acknowledge it and unwilling to change. And it was whilst he was in Milan that he heard the sermons of Bishop Ambrose. So Ambrose is 15 years older than Augustine. He comes from a very different social background. Augustine's the kind of man who had to climb the ladder from the very bottom, and he had to do it from a remote corner of the empire. Ambrose is someone who has been raised in real privilege. He was educated in Rome. He was the son of an important lawyer and politician. And Ambrose is widely respected as a godly statesman. So Augustine goes along to hear Ambrose preach. And the only reason he goes in the first place is he thinks, he's a famous preacher. Rhetoric is my business. Maybe I might pick up some interesting tips from the way in which Ambrose preaches to people. Before this, Augustine didn't really like the Old Testament. He said when he looked at the Old Testament, it seemed sort of crude and quite barbaric. But as Augustine listens to Ambrose preach, he's really struck by the way that Ambrose can preach the gospel from the Old Testament. What Ambrose is doing in his preaching is really putting the Bible into Augustine's hands. It gives the Bible back to Augustine. And in this book that we keep talking about, the Confessions, there is hardly a page of it that doesn't have multiple references to the scriptures. When the Bible's put back into Augustine's hands, eventually it's going to get right down into his heart, and it'll come out when he writes about the Christian faith. So he's in Milan. He's met with Ambrose. Ambrose's preaching and his kindness has really impressed Augustine. And Augustine comes to the point where he's intellectually persuaded about Christianity and its truth. He knows that it can answer the questions that Manichaeism couldn't, but two things stood in his way. First of all, he was unwilling to accept Christian morality. He balked at the prospect of celibacy. At the time, many people thought that a real, true, and deeply committed Christian life would involve someone accepting celibacy. And for Augustine, he can't even contemplate that. And secondly, he's got some problems about the doctrine of sin. He doesn't really understand how God could be good and create a world in which there was sin and evil. So what needs to happen when someone is in that position? He's persuaded of the truth of Christianity. In many ways, the Bible's been put back in his hands, but he's not ready to make any kind of commitment, and he's still got some questions which are unanswered. Well, you know, he needs someone to talk to. He needs someone to work these issues through with. And Augustine finds that person in one of Ambrose's assistants, an old man named Simplicianus. And Simplicianus listens to Augustine share his doubts and fears. And one of the really interesting things that Simplicianus is able to do is to share with Augustine the testimonies of people who have put aside secular ambition for the sake of following Jesus Christ. As Augustine and Simplicianus talk together, Simplicianus talks to him about a fellow African, a man called Victorinus, who was a prominent scholar. Just the kind of example that Augustine needs. The Senate had honored Victorinus. They had erected a statue of him in the Forum in Rome. And later in life, Victorinus became a convert to Christianity. He was a secret convert for many years, And then finally he reached the point where he realized that he needed to go public and he needed to profess the faith and to present himself for baptism. And God in his mercy sends other people to Augustine. About the same time, he's visited by a friend, Ponticianus. He's a high-ranking official. And Ponticianus is surprised that when he goes into Augustine's home, there's a copy of Paul's letters sitting on Augustine's table. Augustine explained that he had been reading the Bible, and Ponticianus, who's a committed Christian, he was delighted to see it. So lots that's encouraging. But Augustine looked at himself and thought, I could never be a Christian. I could never do what Victorinus did. I could never come public with my faith. I could never commit myself to that course of action. Age 31, when he looked in the mirror, he was appalled at what he saw, but he feared, quote, there was no way of escaping from myself. Listen to him spell this out a little bit more. I was an unhappy young man, wretched from the beginning of my adolescence. When I prayed to you for chastity and said, grant me chastity and continence, but not yet. I was afraid you might hear my prayer quickly and that you might too rapidly heal me of the disease of lust, which I preferred to satisfy rather than to suppress. And so Augustine falls into a state of deep despair. Part of him is really drawn to the idea of being a committed Christian, but another part of him finds it simply too hard to leave behind the pleasures of this world. He's deeply aware of his own sin, and yet at the very same time, he is unwilling to confront it. He describes it this way. I wanted to hide it from myself, but the day had now come when I stood naked to myself. Well, in anguish, feeling naked and exposed before God, he rushed out from his house into the garden. And he wrote that he was torn in two. On the one hand, he knew exactly what he wanted to do. And on the other hand, his old loves, the sins of the flesh, were, as he put it, calling out to him saying, are you getting rid of us? And from this moment, we shall never see you again. And Augustine, as he's pictured there, sobbed in agony. And as he wept, he heard the voice of a child calling out, take up and read. What was all of this? It didn't sound like any child's playground game that Augustine knew of. And Augustine said to himself, this must be a divine command. And so Augustine opened a copy of Paul's letter to the Romans. And there he read Romans 13, verses 13 and 14. These are verses all about orgies, drunkenness, sexual immorality, and sensuality. And then they go on to say these words, clothe yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ and do not think about how to gratify the desires of the sinful nature. He later wrote, I did not want nor need to read any further. Instantly, as I finished the sentence, the light of confidence flooded into my heart, and all the darkness and doubt vanished. This was August 386, and it brought to an end a cycle of dissatisfaction, conviction, and a search that had plagued him for more than 15 years. Augustine was baptized the following Easter by Ambrose, 25th of April, 387, alongside his son, and it still can be seen, the baptistry, underneath Milan's medieval cathedral. Augustine became the Bishop of Hippo, which was the second most prominent city in North Africa. And today, the ruins of Augustine's church there, they can still be seen in Annaba in Algeria. Augustine went on to write some 5 million words in over 100 different treatises and countless letters and sermons. Perhaps the most famous of them are his confessions. That Latin word confession is more about simply confessing your sins. It's a confession in the sense of giving a testimony, bearing witness to the unfathomable greatness of God's grace in Jesus Christ. There, you're looking at some images of the text of the Confessions from a 12th century manuscript held in the British Library. And we could call it one of the first ever autobiographies. And in many ways, it was a bold thing to do, to write a long book simply about yourself. Now, why did Augustine decide to do it? Why would he spend so much time giving so many details of his own life? Well, simply this. Augustine wanted to transform the lives of his readers in much the same way that his own life had been transformed. At one point, he says to God, "Why am I telling you about all my sins? Because you know about all of this already." And Augustine answers himself by saying that he is speaking before the entire human race so that they might know how deep was the pit from which Augustine called to God and from which God reached down and rescued him. The reason why he's confessing his sins is because he wants other people to do the same thing. I want to close with just one little incident from the Confessions, which I think teaches us so much. It's one of the most famous things that he records, and it's a childhood story all about what we today would call scrumping. Do you know that word? Stealing fruit from someone else's garden. And Augustine records how, when he was a young child, he was out with his friends and they saw some pears growing in a nearby garden. And Augustine says he didn't want the pears because they looked good. He didn't want the pears because he was hungry and wanted something to eat. He wanted the pears simply for the sake of being able to steal the pears. Afterwards, when they climbed into the garden and stole them, they didn't eat any of them. They didn't bring them home and keep them. All they did with the pears was to throw them away so that the pigs could eat them, and they ran off laughing. Now, why would Augustine include a story like that? At one level, it is utterly trivial. Normally, when we think about testimonies, we think that they need to be a little bit more impressive than talking about some small act of petty theft when someone's a child. But Augustine includes it because it teaches us so much about the tragedy of the fallen condition. He tells this story because it's the sort of story that we can all identify with. He tells the story in such a way that it can become everyone's story. And of course, it is the perfect illustration because it's all about stealing fruit from a forbidden tree. And that's a story with all sorts of links back to the Bible itself. And as Augustine tells us about sin in that incident, it teaches us a lot about what sin is really like. It shows us that sin is such a pointless thing. There was no rationale conceivable for what Augustine did as a child when he went to steal fruit from that tree. It shows us that the real essence of sin actually is all about law-breaking. That's why Augustine did it. He stole the fruit simply so that he could steal. And breaking the law made Augustine feel so good. There was such a rush that came from doing it. And Augustine said, that's because when you break the law, you're elevating yourself. When you break the law, you're saying, I'm putting myself in the position of God. You're throwing off the yoke of being a creature, and you're pretending that you can be your own lawgiver in this world. And why did they all run away laughing? Well, you generally only laugh in groups. It teaches us that sin is profoundly social. He wouldn't have stolen the pears if he had been by himself, but it was something that would have been so much more fun if he was doing it with others. He wanted to do it with other people because there was a delight in the complicity of sin. This incident is really interesting because what it teaches about the problem of humanity is something completely different from what Manichaeism was teaching. Now, Manichaeism is some weird ancient religion that probably most of us haven't heard of, but the ideas that lie within it are ones which are very modern. In Manichaeism, your problems don't lie within. Your problems lie out there in this world. Deep down, you're a good person, and it's things which are out there that are causing you to not live up to the standards that you want to live to. But Augustine, when God's grace opens his eyes, he sees that the reality is actually really different from that. Sin doesn't come first and foremost from things which are out there. Augustine comes to see that sin comes from a will which is corrupt and held in bondage. It's not, as the Manichaeists would say, because there's some external force that we're battling against as good people. Rather, it's to do with the fact that the human will has turned its back on God. For Augustine, human pride is the very root of all evil. And so in his confessions, he's making confession of his sin. He's saying, my problems, first and foremost, are not problems that come from out there in this world. My greatest problem is myself. And he also confesses his faith in Jesus Christ. Augustine becomes the great theologian who talks about how God, in his sovereign grace, takes the initiative to reach into people's lives in order to transform them. Augustine writes his confessions because he is confessing a gospel which is powerful enough to turn sinners into saints. And that's why his legacy lives on. Augustine's the one who's helped us so much to be able to articulate the sheer graciousness of God in salvation. Augustine shows us the gospel is truly powerful. The greatest of sinners can have their lives turned around so that they become some of the most significant saints among the people of God. And that is good reason to know the life of Augustine and its relevance for us today.